This is an ABC podcast.
Live across Victoria.
On the ABC Listen app.
Your smart speaker.
And on your radio.
This is ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
The conversations that are important to you. In your town, your suburb.
This is The Conversation Hour with Rochelle Hunt.
It's murder on the dance floor. You better not kill the groom, DJ. Gonna burn this goddamn house right down. Oh, I know.
So from inappropriate dancing to boy mum culture, the Beckham family saga has pretty much broken the internet this week and has created some of the best dancing memes and dancing videos since the internet was invented. Coming up first this morning, Jacinta Parsons will be joining me to discuss what is inappropriate dancing and what is boy mum culture. Is the mother-in-law, daughter-in-law rift real? Are some mums jealous of their son's partners? And as a mum, are your dance moves inappropriate? And then later in the hour, do we have enough people putting up their hands to volunteer in our emergency services? Yep, from one to the other, we do it all.
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
You dance with your teeth.
Do I?
Yes. I can't believe you've been all the dancing I've been doing to try and put you off at the start of that.
I tried so hard.
Stop.
Hang on.
Hand was up. But look at you. Dance again. I'm going to tell you. Dance again.
Is it inappropriate
no, it's
to dance with your teeth?
I think teeth dancing is underrated. Because like it's like, you know, I'm so committed I've got to bite down on my lower lip.
What is teeth dancing? Does that mean I'm pulling a face?
No, you're hungry for what you're doing. Try it again. Yeah,
no.
Just, oh, don't be shy. This is the thing.
Okay.
We're talking today. I'm not going to set this up because you do it so well.
Inappropriate dancing. So if you've been on the internet, basically, you would have heard or at least got a whiff of the Beckham family drama.
I just got a whiff.
Yeah.
And then actually, I was interested when we talk about the story in a minute, just all the ways that this has been broken down and actually talking about really actually important things like family rifts, which are some of the most painful experiences families go through.
So you know. The Beckhams, the son, I don't even know his name, Brooklyn.
Brooklyn.
Beckham. Anyhow, he went very public and said, our family, I'm stepping away. I don't want anything to do with my family anymore for a number of reasons. One of them being that my mum danced inappropriately on me.
Wow. Mm. Everything. Okay.
And with the, I think at my wedding.
Any on me is
and
not okay.
Stole that moment from my wife. And as a result, then this whole conversation has started around boy mum culture and whether or not there is a rift between Victoria and his partner, whatever her name is. She's some big fancy
Let's
heiress
call her
actor.
New York.
Yeah. So first things first, Jacinta Parsons, inappropriate dancing, does that ever exist?
Yeah, well, when you just said the extra added on, I want to call it a subclause, but that could be wrong grammatically, on him, I think yes, whatever happened on him, be it respectful, be it, that's just, I mean, that sounds.
No one's seen it though.
No.
Right?
Okay.
So I don't really want this to be about whether or not Victoria danced inappropriately on her son, but it's more about what are inappropriate dance moves? And weddings are where inappropriate dancing not only lives, but where it thrives.
You're going to get a walkley for the way you just said that. Yes, I think it does. I think especially on the wedding dance floor where you have a mixture of humans who've gone through different generations of what is acceptable body expression and what maybe you need to just do at home by yourself. Because maybe, I mean, I was fully coming in here today to say it's just capitalism writ large that you're not allowed to dance the way you want to dance, like control society telling you not. But I realize what we're talking about is a bit of sexy dancing.
Well, just wedding dancing. Okay. Because I think what happens is, and for most of us is that we get to a period in our lives where we don't dance very often. You know, we're not going to clubs, we're not dancing, we're not dance fit. And then you go to a wedding and all of a sudden, you know, you might hear something like this.
Oh.
Your teeth come out.
I'm so sorry to tell you about your teeth because I want you to be free with them. You also have a side eye that says, let's do it. Let's go to the dance floor. Yeah. Do you know what? I have to say to you, wedding dance floors, yes, but also the school trivia night dance floor, I've DJed those many, many times. They're some of the most dangerous dance floors you'll ever encounter.
So what happens is we don't dance for a very long time, then a little bit of Whitney. You hear this.
Yes.
And you are pushing small children and old people aside. You are jumping over chairs to hit that dance floor. And then all of a sudden you get there and you realise you haven't danced in 10 years. Your moves are inappropriate.
No. Okay. If that's what we're talking about and not about someone dancing on somebody, let's leave that aside. No. This is where, seriously, the control of the state comes in. This is why I feel serious about this. Like, we're all free spirits, and when you're three, you can spin on the floor and, you know, do whatever you like. Then you get older and people police the way you move on a dance floor.
Are people policing, or do we lose the skill?
Hey, there is no skill but the inner spirit.
When was the last time you danced?
Okay, true. When did I? Oh, yeah. We played hide and seek on the holidays and one of them was a disco round.
You played? Are you five?
No, we do a big family. It's actually
very
stressful.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, people get lost for days.
Yeah, we don't. But maybe we'll never find them again or they'll stop breathing in the cupboard that we told them not to hide in. Anyway, but there was a disco round and I had lost my feelings about how good I could be on the floor. But I think if we give up the confidence to go, even without those skills, we lose life. Life is over. That's how serious I feel about this.
This dancing at the ABC trivia night, it was taken to another level. I couldn't agree more. When was the last time you danced? Do we know how to dance? Do we lose the skill as we age? And as a result, do wedding dances become inappropriate? I've lost the skill. I used to consider myself, now I'm a teeth dancer. I didn't even know I was a teeth dancer.
I don't think you have lost the skill. You used to dance like no one was watching, but they were. Now you dance and you know they're watching, Rochelle. Mm. And we should go out for
and
a dance.
Does everyone, though, when you do dance? Because if it was inappropriate dancing on him, you're thinking that it's maybe a little bit of sexy dancing.
Yeah.
Does everyone think that they're sexy when they're dancing?
You think you're a robot and I think I'm like, you know, a 15-year-old.
No, everyone thinks they're a bit sexy, I think.
You are always doing the robot dance. Is that your
sexy
dance? No. I don't think everybody does think they're sexy when they dance. That's not why I dance. The dance spirit comes to me for very different reasons.
Karen's in Ringwood. Karen, have you lost the ability to dance?
Not so much that, but it was about my mum just loves dancing.
And you're okay with that?
Well, it's the highlight of the night is watching my mum just cut loose on a dance floor to her favourite numbers, and nobody is left sitting in a chair because all the cousins, everybody gets up to watch, join in, and just be silly and have the best fun ever.
Do you know what? She's a service to the world because if she's prepared to do it, then everyone's like, you know what? I will not look like that, and I can do it as well.
Yeah. Does she have some signature moves, Karen?
Oh, you know, a bit of arm and leg action, and it's just joyful to watch and be a part of, and yeah, it's fantastic.
It's good. Talking about those dance floors, though, when I've had, you see older women grabbing younger men's butts on the dance floor. I've seen that many times.
No, that's inappropriate.
Totally inappropriate.
And there has been a lot of research of late that there's actually a lot of sexual harassment on dance floors. And it used to happen as Gen Xers. There was sort of almost this code on whatever happened on the dance floor didn't really matter. And your bum would be grabbed a lot. I mean, these days, no way. You're
so
telling
that's
someone.
Inappropriate dancing.
That's totally. That's not even dancing.
But
that's
doing
just
the
sexual
Elaine.
Assault.
Very different to dancing.
Paul's in St Kilda. Hi, Paul.
Hi, good morning. How are you?
Good. Inappropriate dancing. Are you there for it?
Yeah, absolutely. But I was just ringing to say that we received an invitation to a friend's 60th, and the specifications for it were no presents and no dancing because old people look stupid dancing. I know.
What did you think when you received that?
Well, I thought he's got a point.
No. I mean, okay, so maybe we look terrible, but does it matter?
Well, that's the point. Yeah. Exactly. That's right.
And but why does it look terrible?
Well, it just looks, you know, maybe you've reached your prime. Maybe the best days are over.
Do you think we lose confidence in expressing the next version of our prime? You know, like.
That's very true.
The 60-year-old prime dance is very different to that of your 20s. And maybe a bit more expressive, maybe a little less coordinated, but just as relevant.
True. That's pretty sad, actually, isn't it, to Paul? I mean, no judgment on your friends, but quietly judging that you...
Did you break up with
him? Yeah, that you hit a point in your life where it says, I'm sorry, you can't dance anymore.
There was a whole film made about this when they put Kevin Bacon in the corner. Put her in the corner.
Oh, I'm thinking Flashdance where they banned dancing. Hang
on. That's what I meant too.
Yeah.
Banning
dancing. I know you're thinking... You're thinking Patrick Swayze.
Dirty Dancing.
But I actually mixed the films together, and what I did mean was Flashdance, where they, like Jesus said, don't dance.
What imagine if you mixed Flashdance and Dirty Dancing together.
Oh, my God,
together.
We make up the best ideas while we're here together on a Friday afternoon.
Alison's in Sandringham. Morning.
Good morning.
Dancing. Please tell me that Paul's friends are wrong in that you can dance whatever age you are and who cares what you look like.
Well, my sister and I cared. A few years ago, we were at our niece's wedding, and my sister and I were in our early 50s thinking we still looking fabulous on the dance floor. And there just came a moment when we looked at each other and thought, oh, God, we've morphed into our old great aunts who we used to point at at family weddings. But, yeah, that's what we'd become. So we slunk back to our table.
You need to embrace. Yeah. We need to have old... You know, I don't ever want to say that.
You get the sidestep. Did you get the sidestep action going? I'm doing it now, Alison. You probably can't see. But you know when all of a sudden your handbag's in the middle and you're doing the side-to-side step?
Oh, well, no handbags because our bags were safe at a wedding. But, yeah, it was that sort of vibe where you just suddenly realise that all these 20-somethings around you are doing completely different moves and you're stuck in the 80s or the 70s.
Oh, who cares?
We need to stick together, Alison, because I love the moves you make because they bring back good memories for me. Keep dancing, girl.
Yeah, keep dancing. I mean, were you having a good time before that, Alison?
We were. We were definitely ready to hit the dance floor. It was just these images of our old great aunts at our weddings and us sort of not appreciating how they were probably enjoying themselves.
Yeah.
It comes back, doesn't it? All the ways we pointed fingers. I just want to say there's a great one from Trevor from Hughesdale who says there should be a rule to leave mobile phones at the door so you don't end up as a viral meme. If we knew there was going to be no filming, you know, because we've got film of my dad dancing.
Yeah, and all of a sudden there's teeth dancing memes.
Your teeth is the best part of your dancing, Michelle. You just grab... Like that, you know what I mean? That's all. You just
I pull a face.
You like you're so committed physically that your teeth have to get in.
I need to watch this back. I'm a teeth dancer. Far out. Leander, are you a teeth dancer?
No. Well, I used to stick.
Yep.
No, I did ballet and I was part of a Dutch dance group. And I did rock and roll and ballroom dancing, you name it, I've done it. But I, at 50, I got MS and I've lost balance. So there went my dancing. So I think if anybody can get up and they want to dance.
Yep. That is the best call
100%
today.
100%. Dance.
I still can sit in my seat and, you know, do a bit of a groove.
Do you know who was good at seat dancing? John Fane. So you're in very good company, Leander.
No.
He really knew how to shake it to a chair.
Good on you. I appreciate that.
Good on you finding that way regardless, you know, when the barriers come in.
You know, we do want to talk about what boy mum culture is, but given that it's Friday night, people have wanted to talk dancing and we're here for it. Chris is in Pakenham. Hi, Chris.
Oh, hi, people.
My partner loves to dance. She does line dancing. She's done clogging, Irish clogging. She does rock and roll dancing. And we went away on. I dance on the inside, so I'm the opposite.
Why don't you dance, Chris?
Well, I've got Parkinson's, so I end up kind of looking like Elaine from Seinfeld.
Have you always not danced, though, even before your diagnosis?
No, I danced before, but it's... Okay. I'm glad I didn't have to watch it, but we went on a bike trip down to Lake's Entrance, a motorcycle trip, and there were some Greek people there, and they're doing a dance. All the ladies are doing a dance. They get in the line, and somebody has a tea towel or a cloth or something like that, and they lead the dance. Robin asked if she could join in, and about 20 minutes later, she's leading the dance.
I love those people.
Yeah, and everybody's just clapping. Just the crowd got bigger. They moved inside and everything.
And there's different types of dancing at weddings as well. This reminded me, a girlfriend of mine, the chicken dance. But Scottish weddings, it starts as this big outside circle, linked arms, and it slowly gets more raucous and people kind of end up in the middle and it's...
I know. The fashion in my family is the dance circle where you have to do your solo moves on the inside. Ooh. Hard, really hard. You got to cross. You got to be better than the person before you.
I think we confused our dance films too. So it says, I think you mean Footloose, not Flashdance.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, we're seeing Flashdance, were we?
Yes.
Footloose. Oh, goodness me. All great films. Although I'm feeling like Flashdance probably hasn't aged well. I'm just putting it out there.
Yeah. I don't know either.
Jodie's in Mooney Ponds. Hi, Jodie.
Hello. There's nothing like aged well. We've got to get rid of that one.
Yes. Yep.
But, you know, for me, we were at the 21st and my sister and I were dancing because the music that came on, even though it was our era a long time ago, it invokes this joy from your youth.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've had a little drink and you're at a happy occasion,
yeah,
it just brings back all those memories for you. And you want to get up and, like, relive it.
Can I play this for you, Jodie? I reckon this is going to want to make you sort of, even if you haven't had a little drink yet, I mean, it's only 20 past 11, so one would think you hadn't, but what about this? Oh, I'm just burning, doing the neutron dance.
Yes.
Yeah? But that would get you up on the dance floor, Jodie?
That one would. And anything by Wham.
Mm. Wake Me Up, do it every time.
Oh, my goodness. Wham, yes. But the other thing that I have to say is we would go to weddings and my auntie and uncle were beautiful ballroom dancers.
Mm.
And that was their thing. And we would kind of go, oh, look at them ballroom dancing. But they were beautiful waltzes.
Yeah.
And
it's quite impressive.
And they'd do that.
Yeah, my late father-in-law was a ballroom dancer and... Man, luck. Twinkle Toes. You know, just this to see proper ballroom dancing.
It breaks my heart to see couple dancing.
Yeah.
I love it. My dad was someone that would get onto the dance floor at the very first song and leave perhaps after the last one had finished half an hour before. And he would be covered in so much sweat.
I love that.
Like see-through shirt. Finding himself.
Can I ask then, because I do want to speak to you just quickly about what boy mum culture is, especially as a mum of a boy.
Oh,
if
man.
Brooklyn Beckham has come out and said, my mum danced inappropriately on me, around me, with me,
Can I read the quote?
Mm-hmm.
In front of 500 wedding guests, Mark Anthony called me to the stage where in the schedule was planned to be my romantic dance with my wife, but instead my mum was waiting to dance with me. She danced inappropriately on me in front of everyone. I've never felt more uncomfortable or humiliated in my entire life.
But what we've heard today, if this was a social experiment... is that people are embarrassed of older people dancing. So was Brooklyn just like, Mum, put it away, you're not a Spice Girl anymore, why are you dancing in front of me? You're so embarrassing.
No, I think what he's saying is the boy mum thing that we're going to talk about today, but we might talk about another time or whatever, is that she stepped over the line from being a mother, a witness, a supporter, someone who's watching your life unfold to placing herself in the center of it and almost treating him like her partner, which is this weird thing that's being now discussed as a result, where there is those really close or protective relationships that mothers have with particularly their sons.
So, but that goes back to even like there's a saying, you know, a son is a son until he takes a wife, but a daughter's a daughter all her life. This idea that
interesting.
The moment a son partners, that then you're in competition with that partner, male or female, you're trying to steal my relationship with my son. That sort of feud has been there forever.
It has, hasn't it? And I think, you know, especially if we look at the culture and how it shifted, but of course the matriarch in the home where many of those decisions are being made about rearing children and all those things. If we're looking back in the day, it was done in that sphere. And I think that mother thing as well becomes an issue.
But it's the mother-in-law thing.
That's right,
as well.
That's what I mean. Mother-in-law.
And that, oh, she's such a dragon. Like there's never, it's always been this narrative of you hate your mother-in-law, you don't get along, she's a dragon, she's here to cause a problem, and that you can't actually get along. So with boy mum culture, is it the theory as well of my boy can do no wrong, or is it I want my boy, I won't share my boy?
Well, I saw some of the memes that are related to it, and it's even mothers holding their 8-year-old son saying, I can't believe that one day I have to share you. You know? So I think
So how do you feel? Because you're a mum of a son.
Oh, get out.
Are you like, what, so when your son comes home with a partner,
yes,
how are you going to feel, mama?
So excited. No, truly. I mean, this is, I mean, in a normal, healthy relationship with a child, what you are looking at is the witnessing of a child becoming the human and going through the different stages. It's not about me. And I think that the culture that we've got with parenting, it gets really criticized, and actually our children are better off than they ever have been. But there is this intensity, I think, of expectation that you need to be everything as a mother. And I think that gets in the way where you assume that you will be a big part of your children's life for their whole life, and you're just not going to be.
I've been having these conversations with my girlfriend about first partners too and how it's really scary. But at the same time, it's almost like ideal in that first partners, if they're long-term relationships. So one of my girlfriends, her daughter's young, but she's been with this partner for, you know, over a year now. I'm like, wow, that's actually quite comforting to know that there's someone who loves her, who will protect her and look after her and gives you confidence.
Probably won't protect her, Rochelle. I'm just going to retract your statement.
How do you know?
I'm just talking about the gender setups. You know, I just threw that back at you because
But I mean, in terms of
just
being kind,
yes, of course,
being kind,
and that's what,
and protection. You protect friends,
yes,
girls protect girls,
absolutely,
boys protect boys.
And how important that playground is, you know, in that first year, in forever, learning who you are within a relationship, learning where your boundaries are. There's so much more of that conversation with women these days, young women talking about really understanding what's not okay in relationships. Bit of a sidetrack there.
Can I play another
Please
dance filler, do you reckon?
Yeah.
I reckon there'd be a lot of sexy, inappropriate dancing to this one.
God.
Don't you think?
This is ripe for it.
This is ripe
and
for
it. And if you're a DJ and you put this on, a little bit of the responsibility lands with you.
Yeah.
You know that no one can not do what they need to do to this.
It's all inappropriate.
I go inappropriate.
I have to let you go because you're going to the Australian Open today, aren't you?
Yeah. I am. Second time down there. It's going to be beautiful. We're down at the Garden Court Arena. We've got stars of... You're not even listening to me anymore.
I'm just
She's dancing.
Inappropriate dancing.
You're
no.
not. You're a beautiful dancer.
Yeah.
Can you look back at the teeth? Can we have the teeth on our post for today? Because you will see that it's actually commendable.
Hey, have a wonderful Friday review.
I love you and your
live
teeth.
From the Australian Open.
They're so clean as well.
They are clean,
pop them out.
Aren't they? Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, live from the Australian Open with Brian Nankervis down there. Lots of fun. Oh! Seriously. Ow!
Don't believe me, just watch.
inappropriate dancing. Is there such a thing? We're going to cross to the Australian Open in just a moment, but Vicky's in Coburg. Hi, Vicky.
Hi, Rochelle. My call is about partners and dancing. So in my 60s, I went to two-step classes to learn how to do two-stepping and rock step and a whole lot of other stuff. And so when you go out to gigs, I dance with my partner or anyone else who asks you to dance, and the partners are just called followers or leaders. So you can dance with a male or a female, it doesn't matter. And you've got a partner that you're dancing with, and you get taught that there's a certain etiquette, blah, blah, blah. And in Melbourne, there's a whole lot of people who are out partner dancing most nights of the week.
Yeah.
And younger people sort of look at you and go, oh, wow, that's really good. And they try to do it, but, you know, they make up their own steps, but it's great.
I just think we need to embrace times when we still can dance now, because it is so joyful. And I find it sad that it seems embarrassing or inappropriate just because we're getting older. Joy's in Warrnambool. Hi, Joy.
Oh, hi. I wanted to let you know that I was at the Red Hot Summer Tour Festival in Warrnambool last weekend, and it was, you know, thousands of people there. And there were people dancing from age about 5 to about 75.
I love that.
It was so good. It was beautiful intergenerational. I was having a wonderful time, and it was just really just so exciting to see.
Do you still dance, Joy?
Yeah.
Yeah. Shoes off. I love it. I love it when you're at that point where you're like, I'm taking my shoes off because I'm going to dance comfortably, first things first.
Yeah.
And then it's joyful.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, totally with you all the way.
Good on you, Joy. Thank you. This, at a Greek wedding, everybody dances. Nutbush Rish, that will always get everybody up. But we're talking about, what is boy mum culture? Is it a real thing? This narrative that mums are jealous of their sons' partners. This, as a mum with two teenage sons, I was so excited when they got girlfriends. It is such a natural part of them growing up. Damien's in Moorabbin. Hi, Damien.
Yeah, g'day. Thank you for taking my call. Yeah, I was just, regarding the dancing, I just love it when we have our family weddings and stuff like that, and watching my sister, who's a bit older than I am, quite a bit older, and the joy on her face when she's up there and all the young guys or keep the people around dancing. I just love watching her dance and how she smiles and loves it. That's wonderful.
It's beautiful to watch, isn't it?
It is. It's so fun. I really enjoy it.
Do you dance, Damien?
Look, I get up there and I try and wiggle and try and do some stuff. But I'm one of those people who think, oh, they're watching me. They're only watching me.
Aww.
And so I'll get up there and dance, and then I'll just sit back down really quickly.
Oh, Damien, embrace it. Wiggle. I love that. I have a little wiggle. Let's have a chat to Lillian in Echuca. Hi, Lillian.
Hi there.
Really good.
Yeah. I was just thinking, you know, in Europe, everybody dances, and you'll have dinner dances, and people dance of all ages, and there isn't this judgmental thing of you're too old to dance. That doesn't exist.
Yeah.
So I thought I would just put that in. Yeah.
I know. And, I mean, that's what we heard before, that there was a party invite where it said, and no dancing because we're 60 and now we just look silly. That's so sad.
Very sad. Very sad. And that tradition is kept up in Melbourne. You'll have dinner dances like the Vizzini Club, and people get together and people dance. So I wish it happened in Echuca, but it doesn't.
And I love it when you drive around regional Victoria and you see the town hall and there'll be a sign up that says, you know, when, and a date for when the next dance is as well. Oh, thank you, Lillian. Keep those calls coming through. Inappropriate dancing. Does that just mean joyful dancing? And talking about boy mum culture, that idea of mothers not letting go of their sons and causing some kind of rift between their partners. Is it a real thing? This, Rochelle, having a child. child is a gradual letting go process, beginning with the birth. I've always seen it this way. You want your child to gradually grow to independence, to be a strong person. We'll cross to the tennis next.
On ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
I reckon there'd be a little bit of dancing happening down at the Australian Open. Lauren Borden, a part of the ABC sport team, down at the tennis. Do you dance? Do you dance in public, Lauren?
Oh, Rish, I'm not much of a dancer. I think I'm too self-conscious for it. Oh, maybe that's it. Maybe I've got to lose the self-consciousness and just go for it.
I don't know. It's hard. It is. And the older we get, the more inappropriate we feel, just like Victoria Beckham, right? We're just like, ooh.
I think it's good to be less self-conscious maybe as you get older. That's what my mum always says to me. You stop worrying about what people think. So maybe people should dance more.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. So I want to talk about a couple of things. Let's look at Naomi Osaka. I mean, she's really got people talking, whether it be her outfits or whether it be her outbursts. And then there's the apologies. What happened?
So this was last night in a matchup where, look, it was a good match in the end. It went to three sets. She ended up losing against her opponent, Sarana Kersteya. And what happened is there was a little bit of a frosty handshake at the end where Kersteya said, you know, you've got poor sportsmanship. And then Naomi's gone to do her post-match interview on court. So, a minute or two after that, where she's kind of said, oh, I think she was a bit angry or whatever. Come on, brah. I know it's your last Australian Open, but yeah, whatever. She was very flippant about it, Naomi Osaka, and probably put her opponent down a little bit in the moment. But look, actually, to her credit, I think Naomi Osaka going to a press conference after she's calmed down a little bit and thought about it a bit more, basically came and said, I actually want to apologise for what I said on court. They were disrespectful. So I rate her for saying that. But look, I don't think what she did was too wrong anyway on court. She was just kind of pumping herself up between serves and, you know, riling herself up saying, come on, come on. But you're right. She's coming to the headlines. You know, we've had two rounds there and she's been probably the top of the headlines at both times, because of an outfit and then because of this moment as well.
And it's interesting to watch how players do rev themselves up, you know, whether it be a little bit of self-talk or whether it be repetition of moves, the hitting of the racket or going into the corner, or everyone's sort of got their different ways, don't they, of getting themselves into the zone, so to speak.
Yeah, and now that coaches are allowed to sit on court as well, you see players going over to their coach to get either a little bit of feedback, or they'll get frustrated at their coaches sitting on the sidelines. So, I don't think the little come on she was doing was anything too much. But because it's such an individual sport and there's probably those traditions around, you know, how the crowd has to be completely silent when they're serving. We've seen a couple of players get a little bit annoyed about some of the cheering that was going on in some outside matches. I think it was Riley Opelka taking on Davidic Fokina, where he was a little bit annoyed at some of the cheering that was going for Riley Opelka, that they're used to this extreme silence and then they feel like other players are getting preferential treatment and issues around that. So, yeah, it was interesting to see it at a handshake at the end where Kersteya really wanted to make mention of it to Naomi Osaka.
I watched, and I didn't watch it right through to the end, and I should have, but Wawrinka, am I pronouncing his name correctly? How incredible. So he was a wild card, and he's now through to what, round three?
Round three. So no one expected this to come from Stan Wawrinka. So he's 40 years old. This is his last year on tour. He's already said that he's not going to play any longer than this year. It'll be his last Australian Open.
He looks fit.
He looked so fit. He's a champion from 12 years ago, won the Australian Open a long time ago, and he was also playing Arthur Gia, who's a lot younger than him, but it was Gia that was cramping in the tiebreaker at the end of the match, in the 10-point tiebreaker. You know, it was the youngster that was cramping and basically really struggling to get through the match. So for Stan Wawrinka, look, he got a wild card. I thought that's great. He might get through the second round, but that's about it. But I can't believe that he's got through to the third round, and he'll take on Taylor Fritz now, the American. So that is a tough matchup coming up. But it's just, incredible. And there was a full crowd there for this match because Kokkinakis and Kyrgios were meant to play after these two as well. And because this match it's the longest match that we've had at the Australian Open so far. It went for hours and hours. You know, there was this whole fan group getting excited for the doubles coming up, but then they got treated to this absolute marathon match that it was enthralling to watch a 40-year-old win.
I think Australians love Stan as well. Are they really warm to him? But the special case, they were on next and that didn't go to plan.
No, it didn't. And I don't know if it didn't go to plan or it went to exactly the plan that we probably thought might have happened, in that they kind of carried on a little bit. Kyrgios got a bit upset at the way some umpiring decisions were called. They're both injured, Kokkinakis and Kyrgios, and it started to show towards the end of the match. So Jason Kubler and Mark Polmans, another Australian duo, ended up getting through. So I'm not I don't know. I'm not too disappointed to see that, to be honest. I think it was a little bit of a circus at times, just having these two come in just to play doubles when they're clearly injured. They're not playing singles. But look, the crowd came in for them. Clearly there's an appetite to watch these two play. But yeah, there was a very short stay at the Australian Open.
Before we get on to who's playing today, tomorrow is going to be really, really hot. Is there already conversations around what will happen, you know, who's playing, how they handle the heat, whether matches will be suspended?
Yeah, so it is going to be, I think it's 42 degrees tomorrow. So they've got this interesting way of kind of determining the heat factor. It's got to do with humidity. It's like a 5-point heat scale. So there will be extended breaks at the end of set. So it becomes a 10-minute break just to give players a chance to kind of go inside and cool off a little bit if they want. I'm not sure what's going to happen on the outdoor courts, because obviously they can close the roofs at Rod Laver Arena, Margaret Court and John Cain. So it's about whether the outside courts will continue on and play. But yeah, it's going to be hot tomorrow. And we've already seen a lot of cramping and a lot of heat-related issues across the start of this Australian, probably more than I've seen in the past. And that, you know, it's only been probably between 26 and 30 degrees, so nothing too severe. But yeah, really severe temperatures tomorrow and Tuesday as well.
And who's today? Who are you looking forward to watching today? Who are the big names? Or just not even big names, but who are the exciting names?
Well, we do have Aryna Sabalenka and Carlos Alcaraz first up again on Rod Laver Arena. So it's nice to have the world number ones playing on the same day. They're following the same pattern now. And they both had the day sessions on Rod Laver Arena last round and this round. So they'll be on first. So that's kind of exciting to see. Obviously, Alex de Minaur tonight. I'm really interested in this matchup against Francis Tiafoe, not just because it's Alex, but because this is his first big test of the tournament, and I think this will be a ripping match. So Francis Tiafoe probably hasn't gone as far in Grand Slams as he's wanted to in the past, but he's a very, very good player. So I think this will be a big test for Alex de Minaur tonight. And following that is Mira Andreeva, the 18-year-old Russian who basically made a name for herself 2 years ago at the Australian Open when she was 16 and went on this wonderful run. And now she won the Adelaide International. She's just rising and continues to rise. You know, you sometimes see players pop up, you know, once and then you don't see him again. She is someone that is just a sensational player and will continue to see her grow. So she's up at night on Rod Laver Arena. So some really good matches now on centre court throughout the day.
Thank you, Lauren. Enjoy your call.
Thanks, Rich. Appreciate it.
See you, Lauren Borden, a part of the ABC sport team down at the Australian Open. Of course, we'll be crossing there backwards and forwards all day. The Friday review coming up at 12:30 is live from the Australian Open today. You can hit that little tennis button on ABC Sport on the ABC Listen app as well. Plenty of texts coming in about the so-called boy mum culture where, you know, mums have a overly protective relationship with their sons to the point maybe where they're not so nice to their partners. Is this thing real? Like, does it exist? This text, absolutely, boy mums are a thing. They use their sons like an emotional surrogate for their stunted husbands. They invest heavily in them emotionally, and they feel entitled to their time and energy no matter what. They get overprotective and jealous of partners, and they demonize the partners when their sons start to learn boundaries. Wow. And this, I met my husband when we were teenagers. I'm now 74. And though I found my mother-in-law daunting at first, we became good friends. We had happy hour every Friday night for many years when I was on my way home from work. She was always really supportive and I adored her. She died in 2021, aged 98. Oh, not all daughter-in-laws dislike their mother-in-laws. I still miss her. And others saying, yes, it is. Of course, it's painful to gradually let go, but there is also joy in their growth. Keep those calls and keep those texts coming through. And also, is any dancing inappropriate? And should we dance more the older we get?
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is the Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
So we know there's really hot weather around the corner tomorrow, and we've had everything from fires to floods. So it has been an incredibly hard and stressful beginning for Victoria this year. So that means then we need emergency volunteers more than ever before. They are so vital. But unfortunately, there is a worrying trend where they're on the decline. numbers are low, and I'm wondering whether or not numbers are low where you live. I mean, have you thought about volunteering for your local fire brigade, for your local SES? And if you've got new people moving to town, if you live in a small or remote or regional area, or even just in the suburbs, are people putting up their hand to volunteer? And if the answer is no, then what does the future hold for us when it comes to us fighting fires and floods, sometimes within a 48-hour period? Celeste Young is a collaborative research fellow and the convener of the Risk, Disaster and Resilience Network at Victoria University. Celeste, you've been looking into volunteer numbers when it comes to emergency services, and the numbers aren't great.
Well, it's an interesting sort of picture because they have declined considerably during the COVID period. We've lost about 30,000 nationally with the fire services, and a third of that was during the COVID period. But there has been a gradual decline since about 2006. I think what's interesting is there has been a bit of a bounce back, but it's still below post-COVID volunteering rates. And we have heard anecdotally as well that due to some different and new initiatives in some of the agencies with the state emergency services, that some of those in specific states are seeing a gradual increase, but it's taking quite a bit to turn the ship around.
What's the main reason as to why people aren't putting up their hand?
Look, I think it's really complex. I think you've got to look at the context first. And one of the big things is that the risk is changing. We did, we were looking at what's called cascading risk, where you have these events happening on top of one another and you have intersections with things like COVID-19. And we did some scenarios in 2012 for 2030. They have been exceeded, all of them, and realised. So things are happening incredibly quickly. This is leading to people not getting a breather, basically in the communities, because the volunteers come from the communities and heavily impacted communities. You're starting to see things like fatigue and lowered resilience in some of those areas. In some of the urban areas, it's interesting because you are seeing an increase in volunteering and it's almost a surplus in those areas. So it's really challenging the actual model that we have for volunteering and rethinking, because we've got place-based volunteering, which is great, but it's also, if you're in an area that's been constantly hit with these incredible events, you're also a community member who has to go home, and in some cases people don't have a home to go to after some of these events.
Celeste, in the past when I've spoken about volunteer numbers in emergency services, people talk about the red tape, just how hard it is to volunteer, that they want to volunteer, but there's too much red tape, and so they just think, oh, bugger it, I'm not going to bother, it's too hard.
I think that's a very real issue, and it's certainly, we were working with the peak body AFAC, which is the National Council for Fire and Emergency Services in Australia and New Zealand. So we had representatives not only from volunteering agencies, but also from all the fire and state emergency services across Australia, and all of them are aware of this. But the question is, how do you change this bureaucratic type of red tape? And I think there is a hunger for change in those agencies, and certainly for innovation, because you're seeing what's happening is it's not that overall emergency management volunteering is necessarily declining. It's that people want to volunteer differently. They've got different expectations from organisations, and there's a lot of competition because you've got new types of volunteering organisations like Australian Business Volunteers, Disaster Relief Australia, Blaze Aid, Cyber Civilian Reserve is a new one that's just started. You've got all of these different sort of models of volunteering too, like spontaneous volunteering, that where people can volunteer where they have time, and much more flexible arrangements, whereas the response type arrangements requires people to have a level of training and to be able to mobilise at a particular time, and that requires a big time commitment. And I think time commitment and money is what is affecting this too, because
and
there is
workplaces. I just wonder, depending on the sort of work that you do and the flexibility that your workplace does or doesn't give you, is that something that has changed over the years? Like, if you get a call all of a sudden, is your workplace going to be okay with that?
Well, I think, you know, I don't actually have a lot of insight into that. But one thing I will say is that the majority of volunteers, a lot of them are slightly older, on the sort of 40 to 50 and beyond area. And I think that's partly because they have the time. But I also think it depends where you are. If you're rurally, people are very much more connected and much more, they support each other with this and more likely to volunteer. But you're seeing a big inflow of different types of people coming into rural and regional communities.
Absolutely.
And I think, you know, with different expectations about, like, they expect the fire truck to turn up. You know, it's a service to them. It's not something that they're responsible for. But now, with emergency services and with what's happening, they're saying, you know, you have to be prepared for the 72 hours. You have an active role in this emergency management response, and you need to understand what that is. So I think there's a lot of changes happening, a lot of changes.
What's the average age of, I mean, is it most of our volunteers in emergency sector, are they older? Like, are younger people volunteering? I'm just wondering whether cohorts are retiring and that we don't have the younger people coming through?
I think it's a mixture. There are younger people certainly would. There's been some really interesting initiatives undertaken over the last couple of years to really understand younger people's needs in terms of volunteering. But emergency management's also an interesting beast because it comes with things like trauma if you're put in the wrong situation. So there's a need to support volunteers that are younger, and also to make it more flexible, so you've got what they call, I think they call them the lunchbox mob, but, you know, mums who've got time in between when their kids are at school, to make it more flexible so people can contribute in the way they want to. And also because there's new technologies, so there are different skills that are needed now, because you've got sort
of drone. That's right. And in emergency services, it doesn't necessarily mean getting on the back of a fire truck in order to volunteer. Celeste, thank you. If people want to get a hold of your research, can they?
Absolutely. If you go to Natural Hazards Research Australia and look under More Than Words, emergency management volunteering, you'll find the volunteering blueprint that we've done to support national action in this area.
Celeste Young, a Collaborative Research Fellow at the Risk Disaster and Resilience Network at Victoria University. We started today's show talking about the Beckham family saga that is playing out around the globe, but more in particular looking at what is inappropriate dancing and why do we feel like we can't dance the older we get? And on top of that, the boy mum culture that is bubbling underneath, whether or not it's real, that there has to be a rift between a mum and a daughter-in-law. Is that something that is real in your life? But Susan's in Bentley. Hi, Susan.
Hi, Rish. How are you?
I'm good. What do you want to say?
Oh, look, just a story about my mum and dad. My dad's in his mid-80s. He's in an aged care hotel. Every Friday they have happy hour. And my mum, who's still living independently, went to see him. And they were enjoying the music so much, they spontaneously got up and started dancing.
Oh, my goodness. That's made me teary.
Well, the thing, my mum's still talking about it because she surprised herself that she did it, and she, I think they both feel really good about it, but also it was about the smiles on other people's faces. Are you crying? I can hear you crying.
No, I just sniffled. I'm not like bawling, you know. I mean, I was emotional, but, you know. I do love that, and I wonder whether, Susan, whether... Did others get up and dance with them?
No, they didn't. But it was about the joy that it brought other people, the spontaneousness of it, and that I think the reality that it's still okay to get up and move.
Did they dance often before your dad went into aged care?
Not, and you know, at functions, not as an activity, yes, but at functions they did, yes.
Oh, I love that. Susan, thank you. I'm trying to think if I ever saw my mum and dad dance. I don't think I ever did. John's in Camberwell. Hi, John.
G'day, Rochelle.
Do you dance inappropriately? Is there such a thing?
Well, I don't know if I dance inappropriately, but I think my call was about no age limits. So I play in a covers band, play 80s to 2000s. But the thing I wanted to point out was my mother is 91, and I get her to come along all the time. She gets up and does her thing on the dance floor, and people around her are so supportive, and they love it. They love seeing older people dance as well. And all I wanted to say is how great and therapeutic dance is. And it doesn't matter what age you are, but you just got to have a go and don't feel like everyone's watching you, you know.
I love it. So your mum's 91. What's her favourite song to dance to, John?
Oh, she'll dance to anything.
I love her
she
already.
She danced to anything. She broke her femur 2 years ago and she's up and at it. So she gets up and she'll dance and that's, you know, that's the aim of our band too. It's not about musicianship and how we, you know, what we get out of it. What musically, it's what we can give to others and the joy that it brings other people. So,
what's your mum's name, John?
Coral.
Coral?
Coral, yeah.
What a beautiful name. Yeah. Oh, I love it. And I love that you work in an environment where you can take your mum along to work so that she can have a good dance. John, and it sounds like the premise of your band is just beautiful as well. Thank you. If I didn't get to your call, if I didn't read your text, I'm sorry, but I feel like for many of us, we want to dance this weekend. And there is no such thing as inappropriate dancing. That's it for today. Thanks for listening. Take care and we'll speak to you soon.